So, I hope, is there everything clear about the previous hour? Do we need to discuss any, are there any questions? We need to discuss them. So, if it's, everything is clear, then we can go on with this discussion. So now, talking about this strange quantity noise figure, I have to explain here why the use of the noise figure really came around. The use of this quantity. Why engineers like this quantity? And when this quantity is used? Here we have a typical case of a radio receiver that has our amplifier with some noise being generated, a bandpass filter and antenna. But we also do have losses. These losses may be built inside the antenna. For instance, we have an antenna that is not lossless, it has some losses inside. These losses may be a cable connecting the antenna to the receiver. We may have losses. And we are trying now to analyze this problem because if we have attenuation here, we attenuate the useful signal coming from the antenna to our receiver. We attenuate also the noise picked up by the antenna with this attenuator getting to our receiver. But what we get in addition, since this attenuator includes resistors, these resistors, they radiate their own noise. So this attenuator is also a source of noise. So if we try to recalculate everything at the output here of our receiver, we have the antenna noise, okay, multiplied by the gain of the receiver, but the antenna noise is divided by the attenuation factor. Attenuation factor is intended larger than one here, because it has to pass through the attenuator. We have the full noise of our receiver, because this didn't go through the attenuator. And we have the noise radiated by our attenuator. If A is equal to 1, if there is no radiation, this contribution is 0. If A goes all the way to infinity, so very large attenuation here, this factor goes to 1. So we have the whole, we have a black body here radiating at TR. TR is the temperature of our attenuator. Now what we are trying to do is we are trying to get an equivalent receiver noise temperature prime or noise figure prime here for this combination, amplifier plus attenuator. And if we put everything in our equation here, we can get this apparent noise temperature and apparent noise figure. Apparent noise temperature is larger for the factor of attenuator here because the signal is getting attenuated. But we see it as an increased noise. So this noise apparently increases because of this attenuation. And we also have some radiation from the attenuator. The same with the noise figure. And for the noise figure, the relationship is quite complicated here. But we have a simplification. The simplification is that this attenuator, this may be a bandpass filter or a lossy antenna or a cable, is in most cases at room temperature. So the attenuator temperature is very close to our reference temperature. And if this is true, these expressions become very simple, especially the expression for the noise figure becomes very simple. The F prime is simply the attenuator factor times F. Or, written in decibels, F prime in decibels is attenuation in decibels plus the noise figure of the amplifier in decibels. And this is very simple calculations, and engineers love it. Engineers love that they have just to sum decibels to get some result. So when this thing applies, this thing applies in the case of a lossy antenna, of a lossy transmission line, of a lossy bandpass filter, And it also applies if we have lossy components like a passive mixer. A passive mixer is just a lossy component. Usually the mixer loss, it's just means the increase of the noise figure in the signal. So this is where the noise figure really comes useful, but I'm still afraid you need to do it because you can make really many mistakes. Just look at any textbooks, you see the crazy things that are written over there. So, yet another quantity that's usually related to noise. We care about noise when the noise is low, like in space communications. And if we look at the downlink from a satellite to our receiver, we write the Friis equation for the Friis space loss from the satellite transmitter down to our receiver to get the signal. And the signal to noise ratio is, of course, this signal divided by the noise. But now we rewrite the equation into several terms. The transmitter on board the satellite and its transmitting antenna, this is one term, that's dependent on the satellite. So we at the ground station have no influence on this. There are some system variables like the frequency of a good wave we have, the distance to the satellite, the bandwidth of our communication, the Boltzmann constant. And there are also quantities that apply, that get out of, that apply to our receiver. This is the gain of our receiving antenna, and the overall noise, system noise temperature, that includes the antenna noise and the receiver. And this is the quantity that's actually important for our receiver. So, if we specify a satellite system, we know where the satellite is, we know how much power we have, what antenna we have, we know how far away it is, what is the bandwidth of the system, but what we have to specify to the user, you have to attain a certain G over T to get some useful service out of our satellite. And this G over T, sometimes it is given in as a ratio has units Kelvin to the minus one. Sometimes it's written in decibels, and this is the popular version of this, and in decibels is dB over Kelvin. This is not something very precise to do, to use dB over a linear unit, but we multiply this ratio by 1 Kelvin, and then we can apply the logarithm, because if we multiply it by 1 Kelvin, then we have no. Even in this case, we have to be careful, because some people put here 1 Kelvin, and other people put here the reference temperature, 290 Kelvin. And that's some 15 dB of difference. Be careful what people are saying about satellite receiving antennas. What about our receiver? What can here our devices do? Before we discussed the noise temperature of, natural noise temperature of our antenna that the sky is. But on the other side, we didn't say anything about the active devices we have. Well, talking about active devices, vacuum tubes are pretty noisy. Why they are pretty noisy? Because the amplification process of a vacuum tube is actually performed in the close proximity of the hot cathode emitting electrons. And this cathode is hot and is generating lots of noise. So, noise temperatures of vacuum tubes are pretty high. Noise temperatures of beam modulated tubes, so where we modulate the speed of the beam, like a Kleister or TWT, those are even higher. So, vacuum tubes are not a good choice. The first choice was many years ago the parametric amplifier, using a varactor, pumping it at a much higher frequency, so we will obtain noise-free negative resistance at low frequencies. Very tricky to make it work, but this was the first solution. Now we have, today we have relatively good transistors, both from silicon and 3-5 semiconductors. Mainly gallium arsenide. Gallium arsenide seems to be the best performer regarding noise, while indium phosphide is the best performer regarding we need high frequencies, we go to indium phosphide. If we need low noise, gallium arsenide, or gallium arsenide based devices, so a HEMT, maybe gallium aluminum arsenide. This is the best performed, even at room temperature, we may have noise temperatures 10 times lower than the room temperature. If we cool them down, gallium arsenide devices perform very well at very low temperatures. We can get this noise figure even further down. We can also make mistakes in design. So some things what we like to do at microwave frequencies, we use ready-made building blocks. These are called MMICs. Microwave monolithic integrated circuits. These are usually amplifiers. Okay. Could be also mixers or some other kind of device, but mostly they're amplifiers. Why are these more noisy? Why do they have a higher noise than the individual devices that are built from? Because they are built from this system. Because MMICs frequently use resistive feedback to make the gain blend with frequency, to make the amplifier unconditionally stable. But this resistive feedback adds noise. It does not add much noise. We have also low noise devices, but they are not as low noise as the original semiconductor amplifier devices that are built from. Regarding noise, we may have a very bad choice and a very bad choice in an operational amplifier. In an operational amplifier, what people care about, what designers care about, is to have infinite input resistance, zero output resistance, very high gain, and all this what means in practice? It means very bad, very unfortunate operating points for the active semiconductor that built in the operation. This means very high noise, especially older devices are really noise generators. So operational amplifier, even for audio devices, it's not a good choice. If you want a good audio amplifier, use individual transistors. Don't use an operational amplifier. That's the end of the story. The operational amplifier is really a disaster regarding noise. The individual devices, the individual transistors, or vacuum tubes, or gas FETs, or HEMTs, we may need a more accurate description of what is going on in such a device. And the more accurate description says that every device has two noise sources that are independent, unrelated. It has a voltage generator, voltage source, and a current source. And the ratio of the two is unrelated to the linear description of the circuit, to the input impedance, or to the scattering parameters of such an amplifier. So this is new added complication. If you have a careful manufacturer of this microwave device, this manufacturer will usually provide you the noise parameters of your device. And the noise parameter will be its minimum noise figure at an optimum source reflectivity of optimum source impedance, gamma optimum, the optimum, of course, if we have this F minimum, the minimum noise figure, in linear units, not in decibels, this is written in linear units, this noise figure here is all in linear units, because we said in formulas we use the noise figure in linear units. We have, of course, this has to be given, the optimum source reflectivity, that's not related to the scattering parameters. And we have some noise resistance, maybe normalized to the characteristic impedance of the system. This tells you how quickly the noise figure degrades when the generated impedance is away from the optimum impedance. This is how manufacturers describe the noise performance of their devices, not in the terms of noise sources, but in the terms of these three parameters. Let's make it clear that these three parameters are not related to the scattering parameters. The better the device, the more different is gamma optimum from the input impedance of the device. In fact, the lowest noise devices are usually not the conditionally stable. The lowest noise devices have S11 larger than 1. They reflect more power than they receive. So they are, if you connect a fully reflective generator, they offset. But these are the lowest noise devices. So we have to live with them. If we want low noise, we forget about the conditional stability. This is usually the price we have to pay for robots. Let's take an example now of all this discussion, the previous hour, now what does this mean? What is the sensitivity of a GSM phone? Everyone knows what a GSM phone is. It has an antenna, and the temperature of this antenna sees the room temperature. The receiver is not particularly low noise, but other requests for a phone receiver to comply with. So we do not squeeze for the best noise figure here. And it has a band of 200 kHz, so we put in real figures for a GSM phone. And if we calculate everything, so we calculate the receiver noise temperature, maybe using our, we could do it using our nomograph here. So 5 dB, where we have 5 dB? 5 dB we have, up here we have 5 dB. 5 dB is something, some 400 and something Kelvin. Let's go to 600, so you can see very well from the nomograph. 5 dB is here 600. 630 something 5 dB. So if we go, if we make the calculator, we get 600 something Kelvin. We sum both noise temperatures, Boltzmann constant bandwidth, we get the noise power here. Of course, we have to multiply the noise power by the required signal to noise ratio. This is usually 10 dB for some simple modulation like the MSK using GSM phones. It's around 10 dB, and we get the power in watts. We can convert this watts into dBm minus 106 dBm. And this is how we get the sensitivity. But in this particular case, when the antenna temperature is equal to the reference temperature, we can make a simplified calculation. Simplified calculation with dB, this is what engineers usually do. They just sum up dB. 10 dB of the signal to noise ratio, 53 dB of the bandwidth, minus 174 dBm per hertz. This is our spectral noise density of thermal noise at room temperature, plus 5 dB of the noise, and you get minus 106 dBm. We get the same result. You will find the same derivation in all stupid textbooks. Those stupid textbooks fail at the next example. We have a satellite receiver, and our old receiver had a 1 dB noise figure, and the new receiver has half a dB of noise figure. But the antenna temperature here, since the antenna is pointing to the sky, it mainly picks up the cold sky. It's say the antenna temperature I estimated here at around 20 Kelvin. What is the net result here is that if I calculate what is my change of the signal to noise ratio thanks to the better receiver, I have half a dB of improvement in the noise figure of the receiver, but I have more than 2 dB of improvement in signal to noise ratio. Why? Because the antenna noise is not 290 Kelvin, it's just 20 Kelvin. Then I have to remake the whole calculation using noise temperatures, and indeed the noise temperature change is much, much larger than the in decibels, than the noise figure change. This is where stupid written textbooks fail. So this is where they work correctly, and this is where they fail. Just to show you that we make really bad mistakes thinking about just noise figure changes. So here there is no shortcut here using just decibels. We have to convert everything to temperatures and then make calculations correctly. Well, there was a shortcut here to get to the result. Now, talking about receivers, we have to think a bit how to... It's everything said nice in terms of noise temperature. We can calculate the vibration, but we also have to measure. What is the actual sensitivity of our receiver? A typical way to do is to take the signal generator, connect it to the input, reduce the output power, and measure here the signal to noise ratio. And this signal to noise ratio may be before the modulation, so on the radio frequency side, maybe on the base side after the modulation, and in the case of a digital receiver, maybe a bit error rate. It may also measure the bit error rate. But there are two very important requirements for the signal generator. Not every signal generator is going to fit this function. Why? Many signal generators are not shielded enough. We need an attenuation here of between 50 and 150 dB, because an oscillator here, or any kind of non-linear circuit like a modulator, operates with powers around 10 millivolts. And we may need up to 150 dB of attenuation to reach the input powers. So, 150 dB may be easily reached by radiation. A single metal shield may bring 60 or 80 dB of attenuation, but we need 150 dB. So, the signal generator we are going to use here has to be designed for receiver variable. Should include enough shielding inside to be useful for this variable. Not all signal generators will work here. Not all of them will work. There is yet another requirement, and this is that our signal generator has a defined antenna temperature. It's best to define this antenna temperature as our reference temperature, 290 Kelvin. But what does this mean? This means that our generator should include a resistive attenuator at its output. Many signal generators to achieve more power have an adjustable attenuator followed by an amplifier. But if an amplifier follows an attenuator, also the temperature will rise. Then you cannot use that kind of signal generator for this kind of thing, because its noise temperature is going to be much higher due to the additional amplifier effect. And there are many of such signal generators on our lab too. So you cannot use just every signal. There are two very important requirements to be met to be able to use a signal generator for receiver sensitivity measurements. What we prefer to do is to measure just without the modulator, so this may be a whole system test to measure the bit error rate. But without the modulator, if we are just testing the front end of our receiver that has little, if any, signal processing, it has just amplification, is to find just the temperature here. And how can we find this temperature? Okay. We could do it with a single antenna if we knew the gain here and if we knew the bandwidth. But gain and bandwidth, these are two very uncertain quantities. So we should devise a method to cancel out of our calculation all uncertainties like gain, like bandwidth, like both numbers. And we can do this if we connect our receiver to two different antennas with two different temperatures, two different load resistors held at two different temperatures. We call this the hot-cold method. One resistor is heated up, the other resistor is cooled down. But both have the same value in ohms, same resistive value, just the temperatures are different. If we do this, the ratio of the two powers that is usually denoted by the letter Y, the ratio of the two powers here is independent of the system gain, of the receiver gain, is independent of the bandwidth, this case, and it's also independent of the positive power. So this is very nice, if we can do this. Be careful, the ratio Y in our formulas is defined as a linear ratio, with no units at all. This is a pure ratio. The ratio Y is frequently expressed on test equipment in decibels. Also in problems, the ratio Y, if it is expressed in decibels, we have to convert it from decibels to linear units. What type of resistors can be used? Well, the resistor can be our antenna. Simply, this kind of test may cost nothing. If we point our antenna to the cold sky, and afterwards we point the same antenna into an absorber, like in a pine tree. Pine trees are good microwave absorbers, and they are approximately at room temperature. So, pine trees have the form, you see them outside over there. Pine trees are an excellent target at room temperature, with very low value. You can do with this with zero bar. Okay, in the lab you can afford maybe liquid nitrogen to cool a resistor down to liquid nitrogen. You can have a resistor at room temperature. Well, you can use the filament of a light bulb as the resistor, and you can heat this thing up, maybe perhaps 2000 Kelvin, before burning out. You can use ionized gas as a resistor, has perhaps 10,000 Kelvin. So, ionized gas, this is a fluorescent tube. A fluorescent tube is quite a good noise generator at some 10,000 or 20,000 Kelvin. And this ionized gas is actually conductive, it is a resistor at very high temperature. There are also laboratories. For practical purposes, we prefer to resort to solid state devices. Avalanche breakdown is a very noisy process in any kind of solid state device. So, use a Zener diode in the avalanche region, so above 6 volts per silicon, and that generates perhaps 1 million Kelvin of equivalent noise temperature. But we have to calibrate this thing. While the antenna is already calibrated, we point to the sky and to the pine tree. In the lab, we prefer to use a noise figure meter. What is a noise figure meter? It's a test receiver specially designed to make measurements, noise measurements. So, this test receiver, through a microcontroller, will control a noise head produced the two temperatures. Usually the low temperature is the room temperature, and the high temperature is the noise from an avalanche diode, attenuated, passed through an attenuator. The excess noise ratio is the ratio of the two, usually given in decibels, is logarithmic units. If we make just two measurements, noise head on or off, we get the Y factor, the ratio of the two powers, and from this Y factor we can calculate the noise temperature of our device in the test, provided that we know the noise of the subsequent stages if the gain of this device is not high. If the gain of the device is high, then we can neglect this step. But if the gain of the device is not high, we should take the correction also, the noise temperature Tm of our test receiver. Okay, we can calculate this noise temperature also through the noise figure. But a test receiver with a microcontroller can do more than that. We can do calibration before our measurement, connecting the noise fed directly to the input of our receiver without the device under test. And in this case, we get four measurements. Two measurements with the calibration and two measurements through our device as a test. Each of each two measurements, noise head on off for calibration, noise head on off for the device as a test. We get four equations, and the microcontroller can solve these four equations for four unknowns. We can get the temperature of our device, the gain of our device, the temperature of our test receiver, and this constant that applies to our receiver. So gain of our receiver times its bandwidth times its response. This is very nice because such a test receiver can also replace a scalar network analyzer, because it can also derive the transfer function of our test device. Just the scalar transfer function with no phase, but we get the gain of our device, besides the temperature. So this is a very useful piece of equipment, if you know how to use it. People don't know how to use it, so they don't buy it. That's the difficulty. That's the reason why these noise figure meters are not very popular, because people don't know how to use them. Before we were talking about processing, and in the case of digital transmission, noise actually translates into errors. The quantity word we are talking about in digital communications is bit error. The probability a bit is going to be in error. What we have to do in order to calculate the bit error rate, we have first to look at what kind of modulation are we going to use in our probability. And I'm starting this discussion with the simplest possible modulation with BPSK. BPSK may have its phase in this direction, for instance, to transmit a zero, what is here, a zero, zero or one or the other phase. The other phase is just 180 degrees around. And in our complex plane, now in the receiver, we have to select the decision threshold, whatever is left, whatever is right of this decision threshold is taken. 1, whatever is left of this decision threshold is 0. Now in the receiver, the signal phasor, we sum the signal phasor, our noise phasor. For convenience, we write the noise phasor as the sum of an in-phase component and quadrature component. It's easy to see here that only the in-phase component will have any effect of approaching or moving away from the decision threshold. The quadrature component moves in parallel with the decision threshold, so in the case of BPSK, it has no effect on the bit error. Both in-phase and quadrature components, we can, if since these are random variables, random originating from many small independent quantum effects, they will have a Gaussian distribution. And they will have the same standard deviation, both of them. And if we look at the size of the effective, this is the effective value of this voltage. So this is the mean of the square of this voltage, the square of the effective value. This is just the sum of the mean of the squares of the two in-phase and quadrature components, and it's 2 sigma squared. Just to rewrite all my equations with the noise voltage, effective noise voltage, not with this sigma, because this sigma is some quantity. So if you calculate the probability that we are in error, let's say a 1 shifts to a 0, or a 0 shifts to a 1, in the case of a symmetric threshold exactly at the 0, these two probabilities are the same, are just the final bit error. If we compute these integrals, we get such a such an expression, and of course we had to integrate along our real our in-phase component of the noise. And this is an integral that cannot be solved analytically, but mathematicians have found a way around that. They invented the error function that fits into our integral. So we can express our integral with the error function, defined as this is the way mathematicians define the error function. And they have this error function tabulated, they have formulas to calculate these error functions. So everything is already done by the mathematicians, so we use the error function here. And we express our bit error rate as one half of the error function. We will see later on why this one half is important here. Of our signal body divided by the effective voltage of the noise. Or expressed with powers, since powers go with the square of the effective value, is one half of the error factor of the square root of the signal to noise ratio. And this is important for us that we have such a closed form solution to our problem of bit error. Right. If we look at the result of this formula, so we write this formula, we write the this ratio here in decibels, this signal to noise ratio in decibels. We write it here and we see the bit error rate. For BPSK, still we go for BPSK, for this very simple modulation here, we see that we have very high error rates at negative signal noise ratio. At 0 dB, at 0 dB we have also quite a high error rate. But if we go to 20 dB of signal noise ratio, errors practically zero. Already at 10 dB, 10 dB is useful value. 10 dB, 3.9 times 10 to the minus 6. Or in the other way, if we want bit error rate of 10 to the minus 6 is 10.5 dB. So this is the reason why I said before with the GSM phone, if you remember the example of the GSM phone, okay. I said we need 10 dB. We need 10 dB because 10 dB already gives us useful performance. 10 dB is already useful performance, useful bit error. Okay. If we add just 10 dB, go to 20 dB, the error will vanish in any computation. Well, you will say the error will not vanish. Why the error will not vanish? Because noise is not Gaussian always, and we have other impairments, like distortion, like multipath. Multipath in radio communications, also dispersion in optical fiber. This also causes that the bit error rate will not go to zero, even at very high signal to noise ratio, because the signal itself carries the interference, the distortion. If we look at other kinds of modulation, BPSK and QPSK have the same curve, but if we go to car order modulation, we get a better spectral efficiency, but we also need a higher noise ratio to achieve the same. On the other hand, what is disturbing here is the Shannon limit. Mr. Shannon says we could communicate with much worse signal to noise ratio than we actually really need them for our communication. But with an unlimited bandwidth. If the bandwidth goes to infinity. Where do we get this from? The Shannon theorem? This is the Shannon capacitor theorem. If we limit this expression to bandwidth to infinity, we get the natural logarithm of 2. And natural logarithm of 2 expressed in decibels is minus 1.6 dB. So minus 1.6 dB signal to noise ratio is already enough for error-free communication. As we get the one half. Why the one half? One cap is actually the worst possible bit error rate. Because if you have the bit error rate of 1, what we have to do? It's like using the weather prediction on TV. If you listen to the weatherman and think just the opposite of about what he's saying, you'll get a good weather prediction. So, if the weatherman has a 1 cap bit error rate, then you're in real trouble. You don't know anything about what is the weather going to be tomorrow. So this is the reason why 1 cap is the limit for us, and why we have 1 cap in front here of the error function, where this 1 cap comes from. This is the weatherman. Okay, we can do better if we use some kind of forward error correction. So to add parity bits to our message, through a noisy channel, some bits in our message and in our parity bits may get corrupted, but with the correct forward error correction decoded, we can get our message corrected. Not always, but in most cases. What means not always? We still get errors, but the errors are much less frequent than they are. So, what can forward error correction do? I'm not going to discuss any details of the error correcting codes. But for quite many years, the NASA Deep Space codes were considered, this is convolution codes 2x plus some block code 15%, this is what it is. 2.2 comes from, and this gains something about, from this 12 dB, we actually gain here some 8 dB of gain. We still have 4 dB from the channel. Then in the 90s of the previous century, so 25 years ago, some French mathematicians invented turbo codes, and this can approach the channel limit to about half a dB, at a slightly increased bandwidth. But there is still a mathematical challenge, so half a dB may be good for us engineers, but for mathematicians to write their PhDs, they have to get down to the channel, even though they always blame Shannon as being a bad mathematician. But, now they are learning how to approach Shannon. Okay. I think this should be enough for this hour, because next hour we have to talk about phase noise, and that's an even more difficult issue to discuss. So if we have any questions about what we talked about now, please bring them out now, because next hour we have a difficult issue to discuss. Yes?
This channel, I mean, if SNR is below 0 dB, it means how you distinguish the signal? Because you signal and noise
are... yes. The signal is buried in noise, but it can still be decoded out. It can still be decoded out. Let's say here, we are not talking signal-to-noise ratio in the full bundle. We are talking about bit energy divided by the noise spectral density. Noise spectral density we had right at the beginning. The noise spectral density. If you go right to the beginning. Also has units of energy. The noise spectral density unit of energy, so that multiplied by frequency is power. So if you compare the bit energy or message energy compared to the noise spectral density, and this actually can go far below zero, because we make the bandwidth larger. We increase the bandwidth of this parity. This is one. But the other reason is also here. Even at 0 dB, we have 8% of bit error rate. We still have a pretty large amount of bits coming to the system part at 0 dB. Even at minus 5 dB, we have 23.6 dB of bit error rate. But still we have some bits, we know that some bits are getting correct, other bits are not. So these things really never, this curve here, never approaches 1 cap. There's still some margin that we can use. And with the correct coding, we can squeeze that thing out into an error-free message. With a trigger. Is that here? We can make a break. So we continue at 15 past.